price for 20 one euros too.
Sure, however many you want.
That's more than one in home only.
Really?
No, no, for whoever you want. So that's why I want. So we'll start with that. Okay, so this is our second session of the parenting paradigms. So I want to think more about paradigms this time, but I just want to start with really some review from last time.
Do
you? I don't know. So the review from last time is just that we want to go from lobster to human, right? So we want to go from, and what does that mean? So we're going to talk about that process a little bit more, both for the kids and for the adults. But I did make this in terms of being proactive. So that's really your last word on the sheet, is to be the proactive parent. So we'll talk more about that. But here this is just my own thoughts, and you can put it however you want. You can make your own table. But just to put your kid in each one and sit down together and think, what does my child need right now to help grow emotionally, socially, in the family? So I put social, I divided social to outside the family, inside the family, really. So social, outside the family, inside the family, is its own thing, because there's their own dynamics. Which siblings are they getting along with? Which parents are having a hard time with them? Who's avoiding who? Educational, school, so physical, and their body. And then, really, these are about achieving independence and happiness, which are the real ultimate goals, right? How will they achieve independence and happiness? So you could either do it with, I mean, I was trying to play with the table. I'm thinking about it a little bit. How could you get it so that each realm you want them to achieve independence and happiness in the physical realm, in the educational realm, in the family realm, in the social realm, in the emotional realm? You might want to put spiritual realm in there, depending on your family and what you're trying to grow, or any other realm that you feel is important in your family. And then just consider, how can you help bring that child to independence and happiness in each realm? Because that's your ultimate goal, is an independent and hopefully happy child. And how can you help facilitate that journey for them? So this is really just to take notes on how might you facilitate that journey for them. Not what you're going to do for them, because as they're moving into greater competence in their lives, it's how can you undergird rather than overbear. Right? How can
under
you...
Under what?
Undergird.
G-E-R-D?
I don't
know.
G-E-R-D.
Never heard of them.
Undergird, so
support.
Probably support,
like girdle,
yeah, support,
right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like girdle.
Yeah, girdle is a support. Yeah, that's a support thing.
Gird.
Right, gird, undergird. How do you support it from underneath? Right. So how do you? Because really, what you want to do is launch them. So you want to help them. You don't want to push them out, but you want to launch. So rather than overbear and hover. Okay, so let's start with just looking at the sheet that I made for tonight, just thinking about different things.
Remember the lobster was hard outside and soft.
So that's the structure coming from the outside or from the inside. That was that paradigm that we talked about. Is there every creature has its vulnerable aspects and its structured aspects. So in the lobster parenting paradigm, that's for young children, where you provide the structure from the outside and you keep the soft, vulnerable stuff protected. But human beings are not lobsters. We have our skeleton on the inside and our vulnerable stuff on the outside, both figuratively and literally. So literally, but figuratively, hopefully we want to create somebody who can be vulnerable, who can be open, who can be available, which means they're injurable. Right? So, but you want the strength to come from the inside and not from you. You want it to come from them. So my image is that for the lobster, it comes from the parent, right? You're providing all of the structure. And for the human, which is what you want to shift them into, they're providing all of the structure. So we'll talk a little bit more in detail. But as I was thinking about this, and then also over the weekend, I heard somebody speak. I did not like his speech. but I did listen to it just to see if I would hear anything or hear if I heard anything I didn't like. So since it was the latter, one of the things I didn't like was he gave specific solutions to problems, and that's not the kind of class that I want to give. I want to give paradigm, conceptual ideas, so that you can figure out inside your own families how things work best, but just to shift perspectives. So that's my goal, is to help shift perspectives or open up possibilities. Not to say, for lying, what you should do is this. For cheating on a test, what you should do is this. Look, that's got to be like a framework through which you work with a child to bring them into adulthood. And you're going to have to play with each kid. The one kid who cheats is going to be treated differently than another one who does. And you're going to have to find out why. Was it their eyesight? Was it their mood? Was it the kid next to them? Was it that they're failing in school. Like, well, you have to figure it out. You can't just say cheating requires this. You know, like, it's got to be...
That's too much black and white.
Way too much black and white.
What is paradigm?
A way of thinking of things?
Yeah. I'm just trying to think how to say that in Hebrew.
Framework,
yeah. Ms. Garrett, that's what I was thinking in Hebrew. I don't have the Spanish, so I can't help you with that. All right. It probably is paradigma.
Like he says, forqueta.
All right.
It works. Right. I understand.
Apparently she does too.
Right. So I just want to start it out with this. I don't think we did look at this sentence before from Proverbs, right? Did we look at that last week?
Mm-hmm.
So I'll say it in Hebrew because it's important to hear it in the Hebrew, but we'll look at it. Chanoch lenor al pi darko. Gam ki yazkin lo yaser minu. So chanoch, so this word train up is chanoch, chinuch. Chinuch is how we say education in Hebrew. So we talk about the chinuch system or chinuch problems. Chinuch is how you say it in English Hebrew. Chinuch is how you say it in Israeli Hebrew. But chinuch, chinuch. But it's the same root as the word Chanukah. Mm-hmm. Right? It's the chet nun chaf of Chanukah is chinuch. So Chanukah, the holiday, is about dedication. Right? You're rededicating the temple. But what is dedication in children? So it's not being it's not their dedication to a task, but it's dedicating them to the life that you want them to have. So it's bringing to them to that place of dedication. I'm trying to think if there's a better way to say that. It's initiating their pathway, really. That's what it means by dedicating. Like dedicating a building is initiating the pathway, right? Or bringing it towards the end that you want. So when you say, this building is dedicated as the new JCC, so that's going to hold a bunch of Jews and community and stuff like that in that building. So you want to dedicate this child. So how do we dedicate? How do we create an educational process that brings a child to be dedicated to what we hope they'll get to? It has to be according to their way. Al pi darko, that's what it says in Proverbs, right? According to their way. So that means we have to actually be a little bit like Maria Montessori, who says educate a child according to their way, right? She follow the child, that's her thing. Follow the child. So it doesn't have to be all Montessori which Montessori is misunderstood. It doesn't mean completely follow the child, but it does mean follow the child. So something that would be important in, let's say, Montessori education would be spending recess, as a teacher, would be spending recess on the playground with the kids. Not reading during your break while the kids are in recess, because recess, you can watch what's going on. Who's engaging with who? Who's a wallflower? Who has lots of energy? Who knows how to bring the game together? Who's staying on the outside? Who cries easily? Who takes that leadership position? You know, you can then you can follow them and you can see, oh, how can I bring this quality out? How can I develop that? How can I push that back? How can I work with this? How can I put that one who's a team leader on the recess field as a team leader in the reading group or whatever it is? Or how can I encourage this one who's the wallflower to give them a project to bring them forward? So you do that, but there has to be some following to be able to see what they need.
Observing.
So that's according to his way, its way, their way. In Hebrew, it's the masculine possessive, but it really means for both, right? So
even when he's old, he will not depart from it.
So that when they're old, they won't leave it, which means not even when they're old. Gamki yazkin, it's as they become old, right? So it's really as they age. So that really could be 18, 19, 20. You could do all you want, and then when they finally leave, they're out of there because they hated it, right? So it could be that when they age, they leave it. So you want to try to create a process through which they are learning in a healthy way and it's enough in tune with them that they're not going to abandon it the second they get the chance, whether it's right when they leave your clutches or home or environment or as they start to...
Or worse, rebel.
Right, so we're going to talk about that too today. Right. So that is the concept that is offered Jewishly, is this idea of becoming engaged with the child enough to know what their way is. Of course, we have our idea of what we want to bring them to as well, but we also have to see what's their pathway, what works for them. Are they more physical? Are they more emotional? Are they more coordinated? Are they more social? Like, how do we work with this child? Rather than trying to make that child into what we want, work with the child that they are to bring them into a healthy adulthood. So there is both. I mean, we're the ones who define healthy adulthood with whatever desires that we have for them, and that's something we'll talk about a little bit too today. But we have to bring them there through their pathway, and figure out how we can learn them to guide them best. Okay, so with that in mind, then I want to offer you this concept of Swiss cheese.
The holes.
Right. So Swiss cheese has holes on purpose. Right. So we are Swiss cheese people. So I'm just going to present my religious paradigm. You can decide if you're into that or not, but it's up to you to just choose or reject. But I believe God created, and Judaism teaches us, God created us incomplete. He did not create us whole. He created us with holes. And all of those holes are our invitation, are our opportunity to join with him in creation. God said, let us make man, talking to us, saying, I'll start you off as a blob, you make yourself into a mensch. Right? So it's our opportunity to go from blob to mensch, but there has to be holes that need to be filled in so that we can actually be co-creator. So that's for ourselves, and that's for our spouses, and that's for our kids. So this concept for me gave me a lot more patience with myself and the parts of me that are not the way I'd like them to be, and with my spouse, with the parts of him that are not the way I think they should be, and for sure with my kids, that's their opportunity. So rather than being so frustrated with that, just say, okay, here's a place that you're invited to grow into. And so you can use that language, or at least think that language, but you can create opportunities for growth there, rather than be so frustrated. And also release it to them. It's not your job to perfect them, it's their job to perfect them. So it's only your job to give them a running start. That's it. And then they get to go from there. So you want to give them that running start, and you want to give them some tools to be able to go from there, but it's not our job to make anybody perfect except us. And, of course, we don't have to get perfect, we just have to work on it. It's one of the thoughts I like very much from last week's Parsha, which we could still talk about this week until Tuesday. Turns out there's some different ways to do the Parsha. But when it says Noah, it starts out, the last week's Parsha starts out, these are the generations of Noah. What should be the next sentence? You tell me.
After.
Just think about literally. Don't tell me what you know from the Torah. I'm not testing on that. What do you think?
Noah.
Right? These are the generations of Noah. What should come next?
The names.
The names of?
The generations.
His children, right? These are the generations of Noah, Shem, Ham, Yafet, right? These are his generations and who came from them. But that's not what comes next. These are the generations of Noah. Noah was a righteous man in his generation. So these are the generations of Noah.
That's weird.
Noah. Which teaches us that our principal child is us. The one that we're really responsible for is us. The only one we can take full responsibility for is ourselves. So our kids, we can just give them the running start and hopefully empower them to know that they're in charge of themselves and they're responsible for themselves. And I'm not. Right? So I'm here, like, we say that to our kids sometimes, I'm not doing this for my best health. You know, teachers say that all the time. I'm not giving you homework for, I already know this. Well, it's true, but you have to say it in a nice way. This is not for me. This is for you. But really for you. And it has to be true. That's the trick, is that it has to actually be for them. So that's the concept of Swiss cheese, really seeing holes by design, that they're created on purpose with places to fill in. And that's their lifelong opportunity.
Wow, that's beautiful. And okay. It's low fat.
And it's low fat. Yeah, my husband's just reading The Big Fat Lie. So that's all about how the whole low-fat thing is based on zero research at all whatsoever, and it's absolutely not applicable, certainly not to women, definitely not to children, maybe to some middle-aged men, but it's based on that much research, approximately. And
the eating fat?
The eating low-fat.
Yeah.
And that we've all gotten fat since we've gone low-fat, and that we need to drop that whole thing and move into real food. Yeah. Yeah. So whatever Swiss cheese is, it's okay to eat it, it turns out. Okay, so let's look at the kids' process just a little bit. So that's above the stars here. So their process is to be born and then to differentiate. Right. So the first thing they have to do is differentiate. So first they have to learn enough to be able to have the consciousness to separate. That's why they have, if you remember, at age one and a half, they have separation anxiety. They don't want to be away because they still see themselves as part of you. But the terrible twos, or the no stage anyway, is that beginning of differentiation. You said something and they can say no, and they love it. Right? They just get this new thing. Teenagehood is a parallel to that, right? But it starts out with just straight up differentiation. I am not you. That's what they're practicing saying no about and learning, pushing the boundaries of how much am I not you? How much can I say no? How much can I get into on my own? What can I do? And they don't certainly have the boundaries to know what's safe and what's not safe. That's our job to constantly chase them. I'm so glad. I watch my kids now with their kids. I'm so glad I'm not the parent. No, I don't mind seeing Wheels on the Bus once or twice, but I'm so glad it's not my life anymore. And that I don't have to watch them
grandparents are here. Oh,
gosh. Grandparents is so much fun. I totally recommend it.
we have to get there first.
Yeah, you're right. You just have to get there, but yeah, it's great. They're super cute. And then you can say, oh, goodbye. Time for me to go read my book now. I'll see you after my Shabbos nap. So, yeah. Okay, so differentiation. So that's what they're... So they're doing that again in teenagehood, of course, is differentiating. Now, differentiation can take a negative twist when it becomes rebellion. Rebellion really is, overall, as a concept, basically differentiation when it's not being permitted or it's not being recognized or not being allowed or facilitated. So when somebody can't differentiate, they need to rebel. They have to differentiate. So they have to push. The question is, how much do they have to push? What are they going to do? Is it going to be their hair? Is it going to be piercing? Is it going to be tattoos? Is it going to be what they eat? Is it going to be how they drive? Is it going to be with whom they associate? Is it going to be what they're doing in school? But that's what rebellion is saying, no, you're not in charge of me. I'll show you. I am in charge, right? And they can do what they want. Unless an environment and a relationship, both environment and relationship, has been created in which it's recognized. This is your job to differentiate. You don't necessarily have to say that to them, but you have to recognize that. It's your job to figure out who you are. So you're going to need to try on different personalities, different ways of looking, different ways of speaking. Cool. So there's that experimentation, which is part of the phase of differentiation, just trying to figure out who do you want to be. And you try different hobbies, you try different sports, you try different accents, try different names. I know how many of you tried a different name growing up. None? Oh, I did. My English name is Elisa, and I did not like it. I never met another Elisa until I grew up. So I tried dropping the A, I was Lisa. I tried adding an H, Alicia. Alyssa, I tried a bunch of different things because Alyssa did not work for me. I even tried Sarah once. I remember raising my hand and the teacher called me. I was in a new school. She's like, Sarah? I'm like,
oh. No, that's me.
Yeah. So, but you're trying on different names, trying on different personalities, trying different ways of dressing, trying on different friends even, are all parts of the experimenting to try to gain the skills and the insight that they need to find themselves. And it's not something we can find for them. We can't tell them who they are. We have to help facilitate them finding who they are. We can talk about friends. We can talk about weeding the garden. I don't know if anybody... Did anybody read the Little Women books growing up? I did not read them growing up. I read them as an adult, and I so appreciated them. Especially because I had really difficult boys. And the books discuss. So the first book, Little Women, if you want to read the actual one, not the synopsis, not the movie, but the first one, Little Women, is about her own kind of spiritual journey in growing up, figuring out who she is, has a little bit about gender roles, very soft though, and uses a Christian paradigm. She's Christian, and she's trying to be a strong soldier. But it's nice, the language is soft and pleasant, but it's a book of self-exploration and growing into adulthood. Then she gets married, the next book, about being married to the professor back in the day before the Holocaust when Germans were still the smart people in the world and respected. So Professor Bear. And they start a school for difficult boys. And they create a whole farm environment and give all kinds of parables and all kinds of fireside chats and all kinds of educational advice to these boys in raising them and giving them the space, the physical outlets and the emotional outlets to be boys, but to grow. And she, they talk about, you know, just so there's so many nice stories in there that I found so much solace in having a bunch of difficult boys. And just like seeing different, like they need more physical outlet. Well, I'm trying to make them sit in a seat all day long and expect them to behave. What am I thinking, you know? Why can't they break a horse?
It's not you, it's the schools.
It is. But even just understanding that as a parent, that I'm asking them to do something that's really unreasonable, or the system is asking them to, so that I could try to provide them outlets at other times. Or give them more space, or handle them. I had one kid who had very serious ADD, and I finally sent him to a special program. And one day, his friend comes over there in second grade, and his friend says, I don't know how this would go today, but this was a while ago. His friend said, write, Avi, write sometimes when we're really acting bad in class. Write, teacher does this to us. And he throws himself on the ground, face down, puts his hands behind his back, says, right, she sits on us and holds us like this. I'm like, that's brilliant. Brilliant. Because when he would go wild, I would hold him in the rocking chair, wrap my legs around him, wrap my arms around him, and hug him tight, and have to direct the house from holding him tight while my next kid up took over whatever to happen until I could calm him down, which could take a while. But if I could flip him, hold him, and sit on him, you could sit like that for an hour. And as he was getting stronger, I couldn't do the hug so much. Well, he went nuts. He's really calm and good today. We have a good relationship. But
how do you know, when you're talking about the paradigm, when you're talking about filling yourself up and, you know, perfecting yourself, knowing in that situation, should I be having him run around outside or hugging him when he's
right
fighting it and you haven't seen success either way? And so then you're
right. So you have to
yourself.
Constantly learn and learn and learn. Right. So at some of those times, I worked on not being angry, for sure. I worked on being really calm and trying to provide not what I needed, but what he needed or what the household needed. But I really, I did. Actually, I put in a lot of work into to remaining emotionally not disengaged, but much
stable.
But to not being insulted by the process, by not into not getting angry, really worked hard on not becoming angry.
Not taking it personally.
Not taking it personally. I put a lot of effort into that so that I was able to work with him. And then I went to, you know, all kinds of parenting classes and stuff, to, you know, specialty classes for kids with ADD and for kids with hyperactivity and for kids with, like, stuff. Lots of them. Everything that was so difficult about him then is so great as an adult. So that is one thing I could say, that if you can see it, if you can see the quality, sometimes you can tolerate that quality better. Like, if you can get it down to what the quality is. So I'll give you, for instance, one day after a 3-day yontif, that's two holidays in a row plus Shabbos, so that's 3 days of no electronics.
Like we had this year.
So the kids were nuts afterwards, right? Crazy. So they were running, they were doing races back and forth across the kitchen. And from the microwave to the back door and back, and timing themselves on the microwave clock. So, and then spinning around quick and getting to the back, right? So as my daughter spun around, in order to spin quickly, she put her arm out straight through the glass in the door. Mm-hmm. Right? And so she sliced up everything. She needed lots of stitches. It was petrifying.
Microwave?
Pardon? Elisheva, she still has scars.
Into the microwave?
Through the glass, the back door. Back there. So, okay, fine. So now it's time for her to get her stitches out, right? And she's 12. So go to the doctor's office, wait for half an hour, get into the room, wait for 20 more minutes. The doctor comes in and he, you know, starts to take the bandage off, and she will not let him touch it. Will not let him touch it. I was a little frustrated. I'm like, you know, it's time to get the stitches out. We waited a long time. I'm like, it's time now, right? She's like, no, I'll take the bandage off myself. So she starts 1 millimeter at a time. It was a long band-aid, you know. Uh-huh. It was like 30 stitches. So she would not let. And he put pressure on her, and I put pressure on her, and she turned her back, and she said, I'll do it myself. And he said, okay, you just let me know when it's off, and I'll come back. And I was frustrated. I had other kids waiting, and I wanted to go. But at the same time, I said, you know what's going on here? She is protecting her space. She gets it. She's been pressured by a parent and pressured by a professional, and she's had the ability to say, no, you will not touch me how I don't want to be touched. I will protect myself. And I so appreciated it. As frustrating as it was, I was like, this is a girl who will not easily get abused. You know, like if you could see that quality of her absolutely knowing that she would not let and took the physical steps to turn her back to protect her arm so that nobody could touch it, I really appreciated that. And it was, I was able in that moment to see that good quality even as I was frustrated in waiting. So if you could try to see what's going on here, what do they have that's good that's there, then you could help bring that out and be less frustrated by the inconvenience that it is for me, but it's a good thing for her. So I appreciated that in her. It's not exactly half full and half empty. It's seeing actually what the quality is. So, that independence. So independence is great. And ability to protect yourself and ability to delineate your own space. So, I mean, there could be times when that wouldn't be okay. But really the truth is, if I would have overridden that, it would have been a violence to her. It wouldn't really have been okay. Really just to say, because I'm in a rush or because I don't feel like waiting for another half hour, you have to be violated by the adults in your life. That's really not appropriate either.
But that impression also to take stitches out.
No, she didn't take the stitches out. Just take the Band-Aid off. It was a long, thick Band-Aid. No, he would have to come take the stitches out. But she probably could have done that, too. I don't remember if she did that or not. She probably could have. Anyway.
Good for you.
So that's important to be able to. So you don't always know. And one thing that I have learned about boundaries is you usually can't see them from when they're up ahead. You usually can only see the boundary in their rear view mirror. So you see it as you pass it, and you're like, oh my gosh, I shouldn't have done that. Right? So, but save it then. If that happens, just process it. So another thing that I really learned to do at night is, especially if there's a meltdown or something bad happened with one of the kids, is process it at night. Replay the whole thing, start to finish, and see where was the trigger point, and how could I have changed the situation so that wouldn't have happened. But you really have to do that proactive thinking through the whole thing. See where the trigger point was, where was the meltdown, where did I start to meltdown, or where did they start to meltdown, where did it start to go terribly wrong, and how could you, like bringing it back to the moment before that, have brought it to a different place? Could you have taken them to another room? Could you have offered them a different solution? Could you, whatever it could have been? And then actually practice it. See the situation going that way so that you're ready next time.
Can I ask you a question? Mm-hmm. Going back to the thing where she was taking the bandage off while you were frustrated, did you at that moment have the confidence in her that she could get it off without messing the stitches up?
And certainly to just wait and see. And, you know, sometimes you have to ask yourself, what's the worst that could happen? And really the worst. Let's say she took it off, and it was bloody and stuck.
And one stitch.
And she pulled out a stitch.
It was worth for you.
All right. You know, sometimes you do have to ask what's the worst. I mean, I sew. So I let my kids sew with me from a very young age. So from probably about 2, I let them sit in my lap. I put my arm in front of their arm so they couldn't put it up. But from about 3, that's old enough to take out pins as I was sewing. So I would sew slow, and they would take out the pin and put it on the magnetic pin cushion. From about 4, I would teach them how to start and stop the pedals. So they could stand next to me, and I'd teach them start, stop. And the first day practiced, and as long as they could stop when I said, I would let them do the pedal. And from 5-ish, I would let them on the machine. So one day, I lived on the floor of all old ladies. One day, some of the old ladies came to the door, and they saw Elisheva with needles and pins and scissors in her hand. They're like, she has pins! I'm like, yes, she does. So she could hurt herself. Yes, she could. What's the worst that could happen? She could prick herself, and she would bleed, and she would cry, and she would learn these are sharp.
And she would not fall asleep for 100 years.
Right, and she would not fall asleep for 100 years. That's possible, I would let them cook. I would let them ironing. I'd give them a little longer to iron because you could get hurt worse with an iron. But you just have to think sometimes. What's the worst that could happen? You know, like so. Sometimes it is. What's the worst could happen is really bad. So you know, when they would say, "Can I bike to the store?" and it's dusk and rainy, no. No, no, why not? I know how to be careful on the bike. You're so scared about me biking. I'm like, I would tell them, I did not invest all this time keeping you alive until this day for you to risk all my investment for you to bike to the store in the rain and the dusk. I'm not. No, you're not biking to the store. It's not happening. I know the way. I don't care. You're not going. So, because the worst that could happen is bad. So then no. But sometimes they could do stuff that is a little bad, and it's not that bad. It's part of growing up, and it's really okay.
Mm-hmm. And then you get a lot of points.
And then you learn a lot. I mean, that is part of gaining. So that's what I said. So part of the experimentation then is gaining skills and gaining insight for yourself. And that's what we want to facilitate in them. How do they gain the skills? They can't take ours. They can't. It's not possible. We cannot give them our skills. We can tell them all the stuff, and they have to do it themselves. They have to. So hopefully they won't do some stupid stuff. Maybe they won't try smoking, whatever. Look, they don't, maybe in these days, that's not something kids need to try on their own. But maybe they do. I don't know. So, but they have to gain the skills and the insight themselves to realize how idiotic certain things are, right? They have to put on makeup the wrong way and get laughed at sometime. You know, and then ask for help.
You said something interesting to me that you kind of hit it quickly, and I think it's, for me, at least relevant. You're talking about things in the rearview mirror.
Mm-hmm.
And so your solution to that is practicing at night. Let me go through this. Reality is very hard at night. It's actually easier in the morning.
Oh, so in the morning.
So in the morning is easier. But you're talking about to be able to react that way in the now. In the current is much different than being able to look at it in the mirror.
No, so the reason why you practice it is so you can do it in the current.
That's right. That's
why you do it.
Letting
yes.
them differentiate.
Yes. Yes.
Is being current, being able to think clearly now,
right.
is a lot harder than being able to react clearly.
Afterwards.
And that's what we try to teach our kids. Like when you are emotional or when you are frustrated or angry, you can't do it. Physiologically, you can't.
You can't,
unless
but you can
unless
you practice. So that is like having a fire drill, right? What's the point of a fire drill? Is to actually take your body and walk it out the door, so that when you freak out because there's a fire, your body already knows what to do. It's not about your brain; it's about your body. So you've practiced it, but studies show, I can't quote them for you, that even actually moving through it carefully in your mind, like athletes that break their legs, but if they still can meditate and run the track carefully and see the whole thing clearly, that visualization, it's a real practice for them.
But that's what I think you glanced over.
Right, right. So that's what I mean. Okay, thank you.
Letting in the now that
so
enables us to react to them.
Right, so the trick is
living in the now.
No, you want to live in the now. So what I'm saying is what you want to do is actually practice. Actually run that through again with a good ending that you want, so that you have it practiced inside you. So next time it comes up, you can pull that out because you've done it. You reacted the way you wanted to. You were able to shift the situation and it comes to you because you can't always think of it in the now, but you can think of it. So take the time to think of it so that you're ready, so that it's in your arsenal and you can do it next time. Yeah. So, and if it's better for you in the morning, do it in the morning for sure. I have a little thinking time at night. Not as much now as I used to, but at that time I did, and that would be the time I would do it.
The only time.
Hmm?
That's the only time you had.
That was the time I had, just to do it at night. But yeah, because the morning I would wake up with them. But if that works for you to do it in the morning, great. But the idea is to think it through, find that trigger point, get to before it, and change the ending. But to proactively go through the changed ending so that you own it, and then you can employ it. okay, so that's what we're saying. Their role now, so their job is just looking back up against the differentiation, which could turn into rebellion, which you'd rather it not. So you want to give them some room for understanding that there's experimentation in order to gain skills, gain insight into themselves so they can find themselves, because we can't offer themselves to them. We don't even know who they are yet, actually. Right? We have to allow them to blossom into who they are. Not, we have who we wish they would be, but we have to actually release a little to allow them to grow into who they are. And then this word that we used last time, hitchadshut, or making a new start, right? That concept of being able to recreate yourself and recreate yourself again and recreate yourself again. This is the quintessential Jewish property of making new. And I would venture to say that's why Israel is the startup nation, because that's what this is. Start up and start up again and start up again. You have a new idea?
And it's
great.
Okay to fail.
Make it happen. Go. It's okay to fail, but it's okay to redo it and redo it and redo it and redo yourself. And it's okay to do something new. It's okay to try a different thing on. Or so whether it's experimentation or renewal, because it could be either, right? Just start a new path. So, and it's important for us to know that too. It's okay. Let go, shed it, and start it fresh. You could start it fresh again. Start a new thing. Okay, so that's their process. We have a parallel process, or I would say a concurrent process, not a parallel process, a concurrent process with them. So our concurrent process is how engaged we are as parents. So I did put down here enmeshed, versus engaged. Just to think about, are we enmeshed or are we engaged? And we don't have to be clinically enmeshed to be partially enmeshed. So what is enmeshed?
Engaged more than enmeshed?
No, enmeshed is the negative of engaged. Engaged is involved.
Okay,
right?
Enmeshed is the Jewish
mother. Enmeshed might be what some Jewish mothers do. It's not just limited to Jews. Italians do it too. But yeah, it's possible. So I'm just going to read you some of the characteristics. It does not mean that you have to label yourself as a parent either way, enmeshed or not, but you might hear some things and then hear some downsides and some possible solutions. But an enmeshed parent would be, so this is just on the end of the far end of the spectrum. Not so again, you could be somewhere on the spectrum. But enmeshed would be that one's child's behavior and achievements define your worth. You are as good as your kid is, right? So if your kid's the star, you feel great. If your kid behaves well, you feel great, which doesn't mean you can't feel proud of them. One time my husband went away, and my girls were all somewhere for Shabbos, and I brought my three boys to the Beans for Shabbos, that Irit and Graham Bean. Do you know them? They're South African. Very sweet. South African, well-behaved, right? And I have my three wild boys that I'm taking to their house for Shabbos. So the whole way from the west side to the east, I'm giving them a lecture. We have to make the Bulow name good, and make them proud, and we have to behave nicely, and we're going to the Beans, and you have to be polite, and please behave, and I'm a teacher in the community, and you can't embarrass me, and like the whole thing, right? We get there, and they were dreams. I couldn't believe I didn't recognize them. They said please and thank you. They ate neatly. They sat at the table. They jumped up and helped serve. They cleared the table. They, like, everything that I ever trained them to do, they did that entire shot. I was like, I couldn't believe it. And as we left after Havdalah, Avi looked at me and said, Ima, we made you look good. Like, yes, you did. Yes, you did. So is that enmeshed? I don't think that is. I hope that wasn't. It's not a mesh. It's not I'm only as valuable as how you behave. That's different. Feeling embarrassed or proud of how your children behave is different than feeling that your self-worth hangs on how they behave. So I'll tell you one place where I had to work on it. As when my 10-year-old, I had a 10-year-old who's really, all my boys gave me stuff. So this one's very smart and really a class clown. I mean, he was constantly getting kicked out all the time. Okay, we go to the Gap one day, and he sees a $100 leather jacket, which is definitely not what I wanted any of my kids to ever wear, a leather jacket, you know, and I'm trying to raise this, like, yeshivish-looking family, and it's like, that was not it. It was $100. He says, can I have it? So instead of saying, no, that's not how we dress, I said, you earn the money, you can have it, right? Knowing that this 10-year-old cannot earn $100, so I'm out of it that way. No problem. Next week is the Gemara contest in school, which he does not pay attention to Gemara. I know he reads a novel inside his Gemara, right? Except for he's really smart. And he won the stupid contest, and the prize was $100.
No.
Okay, he brings home $100. He says, I got the $100. Let's go to the Gap and get that jacket that I wanted. I'm like, oh. So I was a little enmeshed in that because I was thinking the way you dress represents my religious level. And I don't want you to wear that because I don't want to be broadcasting through you who I'm not. Right? So I really had to work, but I told him, you earn the money, you can have it. So I had to be good on my word. I brought him there. He bought it. I hated him wearing it. So I really worked on, I am not my child. I am not how my child dresses. My child does not represent my religious level. I am not my child. I'm not how my child dresses. I really had to work on it through that. So that would be an example of enmeshment, which is not full enmeshment, but was there, right? So that would be one. That your worth goes up when their behavior goes up, and your worth goes down when they behave poorly or their achievements are poor. Right? Your children are the center of your life. The center. Right? Not something else, but they are the center. Not more than the center of your activity, but the center of your life. Your children are your life. I've met people before who say that. My children are my life. Right? So that's enmeshment. Rather than saying my children are so valuable, I love my children so much, you're focusing, okay, you have 20 years of super focus, but are they your life? What are you going to have when they leave? Or will you be able to let them leave if your children are your life?
So is it wrong when I say they get in the way of my life?
No. That's actually healthy. I mean, it would be wrong if you didn't take care of them, but it's fine to say, you're in my way. I need some space for me. That's healthy. Right. Enmeshment would be your primary focus is on caring for your children, often to the exclusion of caring for yourself. Right. So that would be enmeshment. Your pain or comfort level, so pain, pleasure, and your pleasure and happiness are derived from your children, determined by your children. So it's interesting to think about, just think for a minute, what gives you the most pleasure in your life? It's probably, many people say their kids, and what causes you the most pain in your life? Right? Right, so we learn from that pain and pleasure are not opposites. But that pain is the price you have to pay for pleasure. It is. Mm-hmm. It's that you have to be willing to experience pain in order to be able to experience pleasure. Because if you spend time, if you spend the bulk of your energy trying to avoid pain, you will avoid pleasure. Right? If you choose not to love because your heart could be broken, you won't love. If you choose not to have children because they're so difficult, you'll never have that pleasure of children. How delicious are they? They can be so delicious and so frustrating at the same time. Right?
There's a quote that says, the pain now comes from the happiness then. That's the deal.
Right.
That's it. If you didn't feel that happiness, it wouldn't hurt you.
Right. Right. So the pain now comes from the happiness then, and the happiness later comes from the pain earlier. It does. It does. Not necessarily, but that is the deal.
Yeah.
Certainly when somebody dies, I think about that. When you go to a shiva and you see people crying,
you didn't love them.
Right, right. So how nice is that? That they're able to cry and really they really miss that person. They had a great relationship with them. Mm-hmm. How sad is it to go to a shiva where they're like, oh, whatever. I've been to shivas like that. Yep. I had one elderly friend whose husband was really rotten. He was not a nice guy at all whatsoever. And she's very old. She's in her 90s. So she got married at a time when divorce was just not an option. And she found out shortly after she got married that he was not nice, but he knew how to fake it really well. So the whole community loved him, made money, gave it to tzedakah, had walls named after him, treated his wife like dirt. So after he died, I went to her and she's like, you know, my husband was not a nice man.
Her 90s.
He was not a nice man, and I don't miss him. I was like, I know. I watched over those years, I know. But that's how she felt. She was really clear. It was not a tear to be shed. She was like, phew, finally, have a couple of years to relax.
So sad.
Yeah. Wow. Right. Finally, an enmeshed parent would be very infringing on their children's privacy, needing to know and often to direct pretty much everything, what they do, what they think. So that would be enmeshment rather than engaged, right? So, and possible results of that, besides the unhappy childhood and the unhappy years that you'll have together and the tussles all the time, is that your kids can grow up and not be able to take responsibility for their own feelings, you know, or not know that they have responsibility for their own feelings, or base their feelings on other people, or be disconnected from themselves, or feel like it's selfish to take care of themselves. So all kinds of negative things can happen.
Can you repeat that, please? Not to take responsibility for their
own. They might not be able to take responsibility for their own feelings, right? If you were facilitating so much and investing so much and you took pleasure when they were healthy, that then you may rob them of the understanding that their feelings belong to them. Because, first of all, you didn't model that your feelings belong to you and are not dictated by them, right? That your happiness comes from you and your other activities in your life. And your children are one large, loving, hopefully, part of your life, but it's not your whole life. So you don't want to give away yourself to them, and you don't want them to feel like, to put the burden on them that they are the center. That's a very heavy burden to know that. And that's not something a kid wants to live with. They'll run away from that. Or be a wreck from that. Or both. So that's something we want to avoid. No wrecks for children, hopefully.
Wrecks?
Shipwrecks, you know. We don't want car wrecks. We don't want wrecks for children. We want healthy children who are relatively intact. We know that we will ruin our children. That's just par for the course. They will be ruined by us, and they'll let us know. We just want to ruin them as little as possible. That's all.
But the first one, right?
Right. But that's just the way it is. I mean, I don't usually quote movie stars, but Michelle Pfeiffer said once she became a parent, she said that basically you just try to raise them as best you can and save up as much money as you're going to need for therapy later on because they will need it. Right? So that's all you do. Like that, you just know for a fact you're going to do something for which they will need therapy, period. So relax. They're going to need therapy.
Just when?
Just try to do your best, right? And be loving. So, but you want to create both. So what you're creating is both the present environment, make sure I'm, your present environment and your future environment. So you're planting seeds for your future relationship, and you want to live in what's pleasant right now. But what you it's the environment that you're living in is 100% your creation. So you just have to think about it. If you're living in a home that is inviting and warm and pleasant, it's because you made it that way. And if it's not, it's because you made it that way. And you can make it how you want it. So you can shift it if you want to. But you're not just creating now, you are creating the future. And you're not just creating, just to give you a little extra heavy trip because we're Jewish, you're not just creating your future with your children, but you're actually creating your grandchildren's future too. Because how you raise your children is the starting place from where your children will start raising their children. So you are already raising your grandchildren. So you want to try to invest in a healthy future where there will be connections between grandparent and grandchild, between parent and child, and where everybody's going to be happy to live in this family. Okay, so possible solutions would be to have a sense of passion and purpose in your life that is separate from your children. Have hobbies, have interests, have friends, have a sense of self-worth that hinges from something else other than what they achieve. And allow children to seek and find themselves rather than your vision of them. Which is really hard, which brings us back to our list here, is enmeshed versus engaged. But then in bold, I put these three stages of parenting. So for young children, we're the director of their lives. And for middle children, we're the supervisor. And for adult children and for the rest of their lives, we're the consultant. Consultant only gets to put in input when asked. So you want to now be creating the type of relationship that will allow you to be a creative, healthy consultant for them forever. Not that you need to be asked necessarily, but that you want them to be able to turn to you. You want them to have that kind of relationship where they see, oh, you have interesting ideas and experiences. Let me ask you about this. I have a son who got married very young, and they lived right across the street. So one day he came across the street, and he said, Ima, last night we... I said, whoa, stop right there. I said, you can ask me any question you want, but don't start any question with last night we... Just say, do some couples, is it normal that, do some people do it like this, but never ever start, so you've got to protect privacy of your spouse, never ever say last night we, but I'll talk to you about anything, so, but he could only ask that question because when he came home at 12, and he ran to the house, he said, Ima, yeah, what's oral sex? I said, oh, let me take you in the other room, let's just talk over there. So we go in the other room. I said, well, you know what sex is, right? He said, yeah. I said, well, oral means mouth. He said, oh. Oh! Anyway, that opened up a conversation, and we were able to talk about it. And because I was able to talk to him about it, and yes, you do have to, even if you're blushing, be straight up. They have to be able to ask you anything about anything except for your relationship. That's, in general, off limits. You don't have to share your relationship, but you can say men sometimes do this, women sometimes do that, and answer their questions, what they're asking. But if you can do that, even if you're uncomfortable with your own sexuality, even if you want to say those words, but they're asking you and you answer them, you lay a foundation for trust. And then they can ask you questions. It's so important to answer what they're asking. But just answer what they're asking. You know, a friend of mine's 5-year-old came into the kitchen and said, Ma, where do babies come from? And she's thinking, okay, he's asking me directly. How am I going to answer what he's asking me? Not too much. She's like cogitating a little bit. And he says, from the hospital, right? And she's like, right.
Exactly.
That's what he was asking. That's all he needed to know. He was 5. You know, so later on she could discuss something else. But all he wanted to know is they come from the hospital, not from the supermarket. Like, that's where babies come from. So you have to make sure what they're asking when they ask. Okay, so in this then, in our, and we'll end with this, in our process, we want to be engaged but not enmeshed. We want to move from director to supervisor, which requires a partial disengagement, right? To move from directing to supervising, you have to disengage a little in stages, and then to go from supervisor to consultant is a release. And that's especially hard with oldest kids. So watch your oldest kid, because they're the ones that you tend to hold on to too long, and you need to, you don't realize yet that you need to be releasing them. And that's often something you see in the rearview mirror, you know, is that I should have let go a little earlier, I could have given them that responsibility or whatever. But so check, you know, watch your oldest kids, the release, so that you can start moving into that consultant role. And then you observe them and hopefully really enjoy them. You get tons, I mean, we're anyway getting tons of nachas already. It's so nice. Once you create that relationship, of course, there's still stuff that comes up, but it's just so much pleasure. I can't even tell you. If you could wait till this stage, it takes a lot of work, but it's really great, really great. And then rather than be reactive, be proactive to create what you want. So that's what this is about, is to start being proactive, transitioning between director and supervising and into consultant. How can you help empower your child to achieve independence and happiness in their life in all the spheres that you're working with? So with this, you might want to just put down some action items, like consider who they are and what they need. This one needs more emotional resilience, or they get sad often, or they get, and maybe you're noticing now, it might take a little while to notice a kid who's teary might be depressed and not just still young, you know, because sometimes they like cry a lot as kids, but if they're crying a lot at 6, 7, 8, 9, that's not normal, but you like forget because they've been crying their whole life. But that's something to look at. Or a kid who walks funny. I had a kid who walked funny. It took till they were 9, and I realized, that's not a baby walk. That's a problem. I need to take him in to be checked out. You know, that's like, that's not just, by 9 you should be walking normally. So sometimes you just, when you see it the whole time, you don't realize it. So it's a time to really look. Take a look at each kid and just think about their emotional, social, family, educational, physical realms. Maybe add one or two that you can think of and see, how can I help move them towards independence, or what needs attention at least, even if you don't know your solution. What holes are there that I could help? Do they need a lesson? Do they need a tutor? Do they need an extra hug? Do they need a few minutes alone with me at night? You know, whatever it is, tuck them in, sing them a song, read them a book.
Shema.
Say Shema. Even adult kids like being read to. That's the truth. But certainly teenagers, if you find a novel that you both might enjoy, you could read a chapter at night. It's nice. It's a nice bonding time when you're tucking them in. And lots of secrets come out at night when they're tired. It's really worth it. It's really worth it to tuck a kid in if you have that chance. To take the time to, even older kids, to tuck them in.
And the kids.
Yeah. Yeah. But just if you have a chance to sit on their bed, you know, if you have that.
If you can get there.
If you can get there. Yes. You don't have to say anything about obstacles. It's their room. I mean, that's up to you. Of course, it's a parenting decision, but you could consider that, you know, there may be a space that they could be in charge of.
Or not.
Or not be in charge of.
And just let them be messy, even though their roommate in college might not appreciate it.
Who cares? They'll figure that out.
Okay.
You know, their roommate in college can put them in shape, and then that doesn't cost your relationship.
What if they lose things that they need to turn in? you know, we've had a lot of that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I didn't know where that was.
Right.
But it's fixed.
So you can say, can I help you with that?
No.
No? Okay, no. Or they might say, how would you help me with that? Do you want an inbox? Do you want a homework box? Would you like a filing system? Like, let's think about, like, what might be helpful for you? Like, I see your clothes are all around. That, okay. But is it that maybe if you had a special box for your homework, like, what would work? What might work for you? Let me help you brainstorm some ideas. But it doesn't have to be, you know, you have to make sure you, when you finish it, you put it in your backpack. Okay, that's not working clearly. You tried that already. So try something else.
A few times.
You know? I mean, and it might pay to look for some ADD organizing things, or even if they're not ADD, but there might be some good ideas. Like, one thing that I still don't file things, and my desk is still full. But when I do, the way I plan to file is to not have Visa, MasterCard, house car, but to have spring, winter, fall, summer, right? And just say, all the receipts for spring, go in spring. I don't have to spend time now separating them. If I need it, I'll paw through it, right? And then, but I know it was probably spring that I had that. So I have a little better, slightly better system than that, but it's so much, like, you have to find a system that works for a person, not a system that works for you. Mm-hmm. So I hired somebody to come and organize my files. I mean, she did a beautiful job, and I would, no way could I put a piece of paper into any one of those files. It was way too much work.
So, really, I don't know where they put things.
I knew where they put it. I just couldn't. I was just, wait, but to put everything in spring, I could do. That I could do. One big box, and then it's done. I find if I age piles properly, they're much easier to go through. They need 6 to 12 months of aging. And then it's like 10 minutes just to go through that pile. But if it's too fresh, it takes a long time. So you just have to find your method.
Fine, yeah. I wouldn't work that way.
Right. I'm just saying you have to find your method.
Each person, right?
Right? Each person. That's the thing, is that you do have to figure out what will work. So
sure.
My life works. Is every surface clear? It's not. Can I live with that? I can. Right? I mean, is it still frustrating? Would I like every surface to be clear?
You're not the only one.
I would like it to be that clear. Is it going to be? It's not.
When the Mashiach comes, it will be clear.
I know. My daughter gave me a few hours of organizing for my birthday a couple of years ago, and she helped me get my offices all in shape. It was so nice. And like 3 months later, she came over, and it didn't look that great. And I was like, oh, I said, when am I going to learn to file? She said, Ima. She said, give it up. You're not. That's why you have daughters. And it was such a release for me to realize, right, I've been struggling with this my whole life. I'm not going to get there. I'm not. You know, like, she can do it. She can help me out every once in a while, and I'll just have to live with piles. That's all there is to it. So I let go of it.
Secrets come out while you're filing.
Yeah, right.
It's very interesting because our little one named Ricky was very disorganized, and everyone was saying that the papers were coming out of the unzipped backpack. So don't worry, because I took him to twice. I repeated it with this woman famous for organizing you and binders and everything. And the result was great. He said, I really don't like her system. I want folders for each one. He totally rebelled what she taught him, but it worked out. But he decided what did work.
So right. You have to figure out what works for them.
But it's not like she gave this or this. She gave a system and twice he told me, no, it doesn't work for me, but this worked for me. So he found it alone. So I guess if I did take him to the classes, maybe he wouldn't have thought of it.
Right.
I don't know.
Right.
So it wasn't a waste of time, I want to think, but maybe I didn't know.
It depends. It depends.
And then suddenly, junior year it happens. Sorry. Junior year it happened. He's not losing things.
Right. So
by junior year, everyone.
They will grow up. They will grow up. They will grow up. And they might grow up messy.
Yeah, messy's not the problem.
They might grow up losing things. Well, if you compensate.
Right. Right.
So they do have to figure it out. Right? I'm not good at it either, but
you've got to let them fail. You've got to let them experience their life.
We had a situation today where somebody who doesn't read emails ever and at 4:10 said, oh, I have this thing tonight from 5 to 8. Can you take me?
I'm busy now.
We could have made arrangements, we could have planned, but right now, and you know, you're really going to have to figure something out I make lists, you might not want to do that, but we've got to find a way where you, every so often, read through your emails.
But they don't.
But the problem is, and this is a horrible thing, I just don't have in all those situations, it's a horrible thing, but I don't have the confidence in that if I don't say, all right, we're reading that it is ever going to develop.
Right.
And that's
well, but he has
thing.
To feel it. So I mean, again, you could make it depending on your financial ability, but you could say, okay, here's $100 for taxis. And you get to keep it at the end of the month if you didn't use it. But if you prearrange with me at least, you know, 48 hours in advance or something, I'll be happy to take you somewhere. But I also have a schedule and a life, so I can't just drop everything I'm doing. So when he says that at 4:10, for a 5 o'clock thing, you could say that's what your taxi money's for. Or it could be his allowance. Say, you know what, there's cabs. There's other ways to get there. I'm not the only way. It doesn't even have to be money that you give him.
I learned to ask a friend.
Yeah, or call a friend.
But the child froze. And I said, well, let's problem solve through this about how you...
Yeah.
Nothing.
It's nothing like a lesson.
Yeah.
Right, so
exactly.
He can miss the event. Right, you can miss the event.
Like, I would have probably...
Right, and you can sometimes problem solve after. Right, but you can sometimes problem solve after, like in a nicer time, after breakfast, some morning, Sunday morning, you can say, let's talk about Tuesday night. Look out, what happened then? what would be some other solutions? You know, one solution would, and then let him come up with the solutions. Well, if I would read my email, I would have known. Yeah, that's true.
But they don't.
But what if you didn't? But what if you didn't read your email? Then what could you do? Well, I don't know. I guess I could not go. Or how could you get there? Let's say you really wanted to get there. How could you get there? What are some other ways besides me taking? Well, I guess I could ask Dad. Well, what if he's also busy? Well, Junior down the block goes. I guess I could call his mom. Or, and then you could, maybe he doesn't even think of a cab. You could say, let's find out how much a cab costs. Call one right then and say, you know what? It's $15. Do you have $15? You could, I mean, in an emergency, it would be $15 to get there. You know?
Yeah, but to put a kid in a cab, I haven't done that. I prefer the friend solution.
For sure, but I'm saying...
But they have to call.
But I'm saying it's part of problem solving is here are some options. This one's going to cost you $15. This one's going to be free, but it'll cost you some discomfort in making a few phone calls to find the place. Or you might have to ride your bike to their house because they don't have the time to come here, which is backwards. But if you can get your bike to their house, maybe they'll be willing to take you. Like, there's a few different options here. Let's talk about them. But let them feel it a little bit.
But you did it. Good.
You know, not everybody has to.
We did it, but still, the getting through, the problem solving. So she just going to, she freezes. She, like, it's...
Right, but that's such an important skill. That is raising them to independence.
Yeah.
That is creating resiliency. And that is exactly what we were talking about, is the ability to, in hindsight, see how could I... So maybe they can't do it in the moment, maybe not. But they'll be able to do it in the moment if you did a good job later on, saying, how could we avoid this? Mm-hmm. What would be some solutions in a situation like that? Doing it when they're super emotional,
I think we've learned from one of ours, right there in the moment does not work. You have to wait. You have to let him calm down until he's, you know... in a green zone, not in the red zone.
Right, exactly.
And his mind's thinking, and I'm not good when I'm in the red zone. I mean, my mind doesn't work as an adult. Right. Their kids definitely don't.
Right.
Using the red zone, green zone, I'm not sure that...
Well, they got on. They got on.
Absolutely. It's a physiological fact. It's not, not any individual. Learned
from a therapist.
When you are emotionally entangled, you cannot think clearly.
But no, you cannot.
Because I think I would react at least... in the past, like, wow, he has something at 5, and try to find solutions, and it's stressful. Like, take it as my responsibility, and you did lemon logic without taking the class, and I took it twice.
But
watch the gym thing take.
Yeah, but it is important just to, I mean, they do have
you
to feel
right.
it.
Yeah.
You know, it's going to happen in college.
Yeah.
You know, and it's better they should be able to problem solve at that time.
Right. Oh, and I don't, I feel it was the right thing to do.
But it's hard.
My discomfort with it is that not like hoping that there will be that the next time it will be different,
right?
And that's
and it may take, but it takes us a bunch of times.
Yeah.
How many times? I mean, I'll just say for myself. How many times have I looked in the mirror and said, "Ugh, I want to be thin in that," and then I go downstairs for breakfast and eat something I shouldn't eat? Right. It takes a lot of times before you're finally able to say, "You know what? No, I'm not having that," because that makes a difference. You know, so time and time and time and time and time and time again. So don't think it's going to happen in two times or one time because they learned their lesson. Mm-hmm. It takes a long time to learn a lesson.
So what's hard is what she met with you?
At first, and then what happened was I had to be someplace.
Right.
And what was very good is that I reacted emotionally. And then as I was driving to where I need to go, I called her and was able to calmly... just discuss it a little bit. Sometimes I feel like I do better like on the phone and texts with my kids.
Yeah. It takes some of the emotion out.
Yeah. So we talked about it, and then, yeah, she was calm. But then our usual MO is then to not talk about it anymore. So that's the thing, is that then we need to, like you're saying,
right. So then tomorrow, let's talk about that. Yeah, and, but at a time when you're both calm, right. So when you're both in green, that's what you want, is because... And you can work also on bringing yourself, like, that's one thing I really worked on over the years, is really how do I keep myself out of that, you know, that passionate engagement and, like, just stay in the calm.
Not react.
It's hard.
No, you can react. You just have to choose how you react.
React nicely.
Yeah. Yeah, because that's a choice that you have. How do you choose to react?
But I really think, I don't know if you agree, but at least my kid doesn't use email. And now it's college time. What's disaster? Because it's really important to check what's due when. So I think it's a social media on Facebook.
Well, but there's got to be ways for her to find out that information. Yeah. It's email or it's on Facebook or whatever.
Right, or they can set it up. Yeah. They can ask a friend and say, you know, I don't like to email. Do you mind calling me when there's a thing? That's also something they can
do. But they will miss stuff if they don't.
Yes, they will, but that they have to learn that.
They have to learn that.
They have to learn it.
The phone will be the first.
Yeah. Okay. That is tonight.
And